Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Do you need a new outfit delivered to you because the local delivery you have a podcast coupon for sent a leaking ketchup and now it's all over your new mattress that's on a podcast trial? I don't really care because I don't run ads on this podcast. I hope you appreciate that. I'm trying to support this podcast using patreon.com, which is a place where you can contribute to the podcast at any level you like. And that way I get to keep this on the topic. patreon.com/Peter's Podcast. Thanks for listening. Today I'm going to start the episode with Cappuccino Q&A, a segment where your questions move to the top of my list when I'm considering what to cover on the podcast, all for the price of a frothy coffee drink on Patreon. The topic for today, what do I do when I get upset? This is such a beautiful and terrible part of living. You know, we have emotions and we always get triggered by them. Sometimes we get triggered by them from something that we hear on the outside, you know, something that's going on in the world. Sometimes it happens in a relationship with another person. Sometimes it happens just because something we do didn't pan out and now we're frustrated with ourselves. In any one of those cases, you have the emotion and you can't beat yourself up for that because having emotions is part of being human. We all have emotions. So there's nothing wrong with having a reaction to something. But what you do with the reaction is a lot more under your control and a lot more based on, it could be based on a practice if you're doing a practice. So my recommendation for a practice is that when you get upset, you pause after that as soon as you can. You know, if you need to make some distance from the circumstance or whatever, you do that. You know, you step out of the room, you walk away, you step into the shower and turn on the water. You know, you create a shift that lets the energy change. And then try to go into a quiet place. And for the emotional stuff, the best quiet place to go is in the heart center. So if you think about it, you close your eyes and you feel, where is this place in my chest that I feel? It's like almost a visceral thing. It's an energetic feeling when I say things like, I knew in my heart that that was the right thing to do. When you can find that place, and we can all do it, go there and visualize your own resource, your own ability to deal with the challenge as light. When you breathe in, let that light expand, reaching toward the other, whether it's yourself in this other role criticizing you, whether it's someone else who you feel did something bad to you, whether it's the circumstances of life that you wish life were different. And then when you breathe out, let energy move back into you and growing brilliantly bright. Inhale and expand and exhale and focus that light back in. And just using that maybe 9 times, let your energy shift. And then you can go back, especially if you need to, like you're with someone, you can go back into the situation and try to see it from a different perspective. Try to see it from a bigger perspective. And be willing to apologize. Be willing to, if you were part of what caused the friction, be willing to say, you know, I'm going to look at this from the other person's perspective. So hopefully that will help. Let me know. You can leave a note in the show notes for any show at Simplecast, which is peterspodcast.simplecast.fm. Here's my chat with Amanda Shaffrin. Amanda Shaffrin is a freelance artist, maker, and theatrical designer based in New York City. She's also a yoga teacher who trained at Ishta Yoga with me and studied trauma-informed yoga with Hala Khoury and Kira Harland. She teaches in New York City and is affiliated with Exhale to Inhale, a nonprofit that brings yoga to the survivors of domestic abuse. Amanda also is a sculptor of one-of-a-kind crystal jewelry pieces. We got to talk about art and yoga. Hi, Amanda.
Hey, Peter.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm up here in your cool pad with your studio nearby so we can talk about art.
Yeah, thanks for coming. It's
Yeah.
an honor to have you here.
I had the pleasure of doing teacher training as one of your trainers and was always happy to hear that you have this, active art practice because for me, doing art and yoga together was a natural. I picked up yoga not as a profession, but as something I did to support my art practice. But you came to it slightly differently, I think, right?
Yeah, that's so interesting that for you, it happened that way. For me, I found art at a really young age. And I think I learned just from trial and error that for me, it became a way of living or a way of being. And I had very little interest in being in my physical body. I really wanted to be in my mind and in my emotions. And I reached a certain point in life where my body didn't let me ignore it anymore. And that's when I found yoga.
So yoga came as a healing.
Yeah, yoga came as for me, as a way of learning to inhabit myself or of being in my own body in the context of the world.
Yeah, and how's it been working?
It works.
Yeah.
I think I learned that when, like with art, when the practice loses its discipline or its heat for me, then it doesn't work as well. They both kind of require that commitment or the doing of getting up and doing the practice every
Right,
day.
the sort of active engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to think of yoga as a way, and of course, there's the Julie Cameron book, The Artist's Way.
One of my
Yeah,
favorites, yeah.
so they're both ways to engage life.
Yeah.
How do you participate in life intentionally?
Exactly.
Yeah. So when you came to do teacher training, this was after having found yoga as something that solved a particular thing going on in your world.
Yeah, well, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia in 2013, and that's when I started going to public yoga classes and realizing really quickly that yoga became a way to self-regulate.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long after that that I began to take the practices home and use the practice as a tool for self-regulation as I needed it. And it was about a year after that that I took the teacher training.
Wow.
Yeah, so not too long.
Yeah, so what brought you from being a practitioner, and apparently one getting results, to having this notion to, did you do it to study more or to become a teacher or
Yes,
both?
so I did not have an idea that I would become a teacher. I remember even being in college and thinking, wow, could I teach anything to anyone? I think I'm just much more of a maker and a doer than a teacher. And so I began the training thinking of myself as a more serious student. And I don't think it was until the very end of my 200-hour experience that I thought, okay, wow, it feels like I really have something to offer or to give, and I want to explore that more.
I think that's a really tremendous way to come at it. And, even if you decide you want to be a teacher, like from the get-go, I think it's really important to think, okay, now I'm going to do my serious studying, like going to graduate school. And then when I'm done and I feel like, okay, I get this enough to do something with it, I should do something more than just do it myself, then you teach, I mean, in traditional situations, that was really common. It's like the students who were getting more and more masterful became the teachers in that group, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, at Ishta, where both of us teach, the first teachers that Alan Finger was working with kind of learned in that way. They were like, you know, they learned from Al one-on-one and became the teachers.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's like now I see it as almost a natural evolution that when you are able, when I'm able to be so proficient in something, I naturally want to offer that out to others.
Yeah.
With art or with yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that now also in my own practice. I've been exploring how to combine art and yoga together, and I think I've resisted really teaching that or bringing that to other people. And now that it feels like my practice of connecting art and yoga is becoming a bit more grounded and stable, I feel more ready to share that.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about what you think of as that combination between the two?
Mm-hmm. So for me, in a really practical way, I think it looks like rolling out my mat right in that spot over there, sitting down, and sometimes I'm able to begin in a seat and start my breathing movement practice right away. Sometimes I check in and there's so much going on in my mental, emotional body that I'll take out a notebook and I'll let whatever is coming through be kind of focused through the act of making an image or a body of words or whatever comes out onto the paper, and let that be the channel at first until I feel clear enough and settled enough to give the practice more of a structure. And that's when the movement, the asana, comes in. And for me, that has been happening before I'm able to kind of sit in my meditation.
Mm.
But I think...
So you allow for this convergence of your making space, allowing some kind of artistic impulse to happen. Maybe you jot something down, then maybe it informs a movement practice.
Yeah. And I think it's fluid. Sometimes movement happens first, and then after I'll sit, make something, and then sit in a meditation, or move, meditate, and then have a million things to put down on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the nice surprise has been to find that it doesn't really have to happen in one specific order, and the practices really inform each other.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense just in terms of what yoga does for someone. You know, it's like a tapping into a part of you or an aspect of you that is where your creativity resides.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think all artists and all creative people, and, you know, certainly like literally artists who we can label as artists, aren't the only creative people. Everyone's creative in his and her own realm.
Yeah.
But, you know, we find ways to get at our creativity. But I wrote a bit about it in my book, Yoga for Artists, that if you're just kind of staying in your day-to-day mind, like your process is mostly just like rehashing or rethinking or trying to repackage, you end up with something that's potentially new, but maybe not very interesting or not very creative
or inspired.
Whereas if you take the steps that put you in that place of inspiration in yourself, then even if you remake something, it has that inspiration to it. It's something new. So it's interesting the way that you're merging the two together and trying to make it a process?
They both relate together so beautifully in the way that you just described, that they kind of flow in and out of each other in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, that's cool. In my own work with yoga, I think because it had this role of keeping me in balance, or like giving me a perspective on living, I was thinking of it in a more isolated way, you know, that I have my art that I do, and then I found this wonderful practice that I enjoy the philosophy of it. I enjoy doing meditation.
Yeah.
I enjoy doing asana practice. So I do those things, and then I go to my art life.
Yeah.
You know, and in my art life now I feel great, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about making something, and ideas flow and all of that kind of stuff.
Have they ever merged in your own practice?
No, I mean, I can't really think of an experience of that. But at the same time, I guess when I'm sitting down to work on something new, I never get to a kind of a writer's block place. Like, I never sit down anxious about a blank page or worried about, you know, nice to paint more or draw, you know, a canvas, or sitting down to work on music. It's almost like, well, we could do it this way, or this could be the song. And it's never, there's never this hesitation of things flowing.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess in that way, I just sort of built a bridge between my practice and the moment when I want to do the art. So, and I think I was talking with you about one of our fellow Ishtis, Pui Navarro, is a writer, and she led a workshop on writing.
Yes.
And we did little meditations, and then we had writing prompts.
Yes.
So I went to it, you know, primarily to support the notion of doing this at the studio, and support for Pui. And it was interesting to sit down and do it that way. It's like, okay, so here, meditate. Okay. Now look at this and write about it. Okay.
Now here's a prompt.
Yeah. So then I wrote about it, and, you know, I did. So,
yeah.
Would it have been different if I just like went to my local cafe or sat down on my computer and wrote something? I'm not sure, but it was
different structure.
Fun. Yeah. It was fun nonetheless.
Yeah. I think for me, when I realized that they were the same for my process, that art and yoga were so related, there was a moment in the 200 hour where I think it was when during a meditation lecture, when we were talking about macrocosm, microcosm, the idea of touching something larger and then coming back into yourself. And I had a moment where I thought, oh, wow, that's what art making has been for me. And I think about that quote by Nina Simone that I've been referencing recently. I can't remember exactly what it is, but basically that the role of the artist to serve it, as a mirror for the times. And I think of a yogi as kind of the same way. To take a moment before reacting or responding, and just to take a moment in that mirror place.
Yeah, that's nice. I've often thought of it as doing yoga brings you to this state of seeing things in a different way. And then art is about expressing from that place.
Yes. And if you're a viewer or a receiver of the art, it can be about expanding your perspective as well.
Right. Which is the definition of Tantra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, my early experiences of like big art were overwhelming. I mean, they were just like beautiful, expansive experiences. And I still encounter, you know, pieces of work that do that, where you just feel broader, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think really great art has the ability to do that, to almost reframe perspectives.
Yeah.
To really open up that plane of experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a really amazing yoga experience.
Right.
Also.
Right, which, you know, happens all the time too. You know, I have students who come up after class and are just, you know, they're in a different space than they were when they walked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much like if you go to a performance or you go to an exhibition and you experience something that's really moving and you leave and you're just different.
Yeah, and in a similar way, I never thought of this before, but just listening to you, it makes me think about how when people go and experience a piece of art, we all become connected in a way that we've experienced that together when we're sitting in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And in a yoga room, there is the concept of that sangha or that community, and we're all experiencing that practice together.
Right.
I never thought of that before.
Mm-hmm. It's a way of interconnecting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll have to meditate on that.
Definitely.
See what your next painting is and whatever my next thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you're enjoying this edition of Peter's podcast. We'll get back in a minute. I wanted to invite you to become a subscriber. By that, I mean sign up to download it regularly from wherever you get your podcasts, but also to support Peter's podcast on Patreon.com. Patreon is a great funding site that lets me make this podcast without the need for product advertisements, which I think is nicer for both of us. You can subscribe there for any amount you like. There's a link in the show notes at peterspodcast.simplecast.fm or go to patreon.com/peterspodcast. Here's the rest of our interview. Talk a little bit about your art per se. Like, what is it that you like to make and do?
Mm-hmm. So for me, my process in the past few years has largely been about how do I exist in space?
Mm-hmm. You came out of a costume design training.
I went to grad school for costume design at NYU. And at that point in my life, I knew that I loved art making, but I mostly found myself working in service of someone else's vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt very satisfying to me. I got a lot out of the idea of collaboration or a whole community of artists coming mm-hmm. together to explore. And then I think a few years out of school, I was faced with my first challenging personal health experience.
Mm.
And my perspective began to change a little bit. And I was working with a physical therapist, the mom of someone we both know really well, Sophie Kozlowski from Ishta, Sophie's mom, Amy. And she suggested that I begin to journal all of my body sensations that were taking a lot of my attention. And I began to journal about that, but I found at that point in time that words weren't as specific as I wanted to be, and I found that I just naturally started making images to represent what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that I really connected the dots to understand that my process of making could also be about understanding myself.
And what was going on.
And what was going on with me.
Were these images figurative that you were doing?
Yeah, they were figurative. They were suggestive as human, but not completely human.
Mm-hmm.
Gender fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And they were more about the experience of a body or a moment in time than an actual physical human form.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, I think, is that as I began to trust my body a little bit more and trust my own sensations, the images began to move closer toward recognizable humans. And ever since then, for me, making, whether it's images or words or sound, has been about processing my role in the world, I think.
Nice. So then the outputs of that process have been painting, jewelry, what else?
Recently poetry. Something that I don't always practice, but sometimes I just hear words and gotta write them down. All kinds of painting, watercolor, marker, sculpture. I've worked with clay, wire. I don't write music, but I love singing, and using myself as an instrument for sound has also been a really powerful experience.
Yeah, but you've sung for a long time, right?
Yeah, it was one of the first art forms I fell in love with as a child.
Yeah, me too. I always sang, like in church I sang.
Yeah.
Then I sang in junior high, I was in a band.
Yeah.
That carried me for a long time.
Did you sing before you started to play instruments?
Yeah, I guess so. Then I started to play, well, I'm not sure about that, because we had band in school, in elementary school, and I took up an instrument. So, yeah, my parents, you know, offered us a chance to play something. So I did that. And then when my friends wanted to make a band and we got interested in, you know, popular music, then I took up the bass.
Cool.
So
resonant.
Yeah. Yeah. So but it was a long time before I took up yoga.
Yeah.
From that. Because playing, trying to be a musician was hard. I mean, that was emotionally challenging.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't getting a lot of support from family in a way. You know, in my growing up, we weren't in like New York City where there's such a thing as having a career in the arts. So it was discouraged, you know?
Same. I grew up in a kind of a closed community in Long Island, and it was also not seen as a...
Yeah.
An option.
Right. So then, you know, you're living in this dilemma.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you get to go to school for it, because I didn't even get to go to school for it. It was like, no, study something more practical. But then I wasn't getting training in the thing that I ended up doing anyway.
Yeah.
So that was hard. So I think for me, yoga was this like reshaping all of these stories that I had in my head about what I could do, what I can't do, you know, what's life for, and all of this stuff. So it was profound in that way. And then that made it possible eventually to be more, I don't know, at least not concerned about the things that had held me back, like not be so engrossed in the story about what I didn't get to do.
Yeah.
Which is just a story. As Alan Finger says, you know, all these stories, they define us, and we just made them up.
Yeah. Or we heard them somewhere.
Yeah. And we take them as true.
Yeah.
So
something that really struck me in your book, was how you described yourself as kind of a Renaissance guy, and how you enjoy moving from art form to art form as a part of your practice. I'm curious, was that something you picked up after yoga, or was that fluidity accessible to you before your yoga practice?
That's an interesting question. I guess I started exploring painting right before I took on yoga, but I had been a musician forever. And I had taken drawing a bit
in college, but I'm bad at drawing. I'm a terrible draftsperson. And yet I always had this drive toward it. It always appealed to me, and I love looking at visual art.
I don't know what it means to be bad at drawing. People say that
Yeah.
to me all the time.
Yeah. I know exactly what it means. The things I'm
Fair.
trying to put on the paper do not come out right. They don't come out the way I want them to, which I've learned to deal with, and I'm a great abstract artist.
Yeah.
And I love curating, and I love making projects, but as soon as they want to be about making something look like something in my head, that's really hard to do for me.
Yeah.
So when I discovered painting, it was very freeing because the teacher I studied with was an abstract painter, and he really liked what I was doing, so he was very encouraging in terms of, oh yeah, this works. And right off the bat, he said, oh wait, you're a musician, so you already understand how to do this.
Yeah.
So that was super helpful and freed me up to take on this other thing. And what was cool about the transitional component is it was a little bit like this beginner's mind notion of yoga,
Yeah.
where I can say, oh wow, the music business is getting me down. Well, look, here's this place where I can take everything I know about making music and have no expectations and no business to it at all, and just make art. So that was incredibly freeing.
I felt similarly about painting after coming from a more corporate costume design setting where it felt very business-like. I think there's something really freeing about that open, empty canvas. There's no structure almost. But sometimes I find in that place of trying to capture what's in my mind and what I want to put on the paper, that's where the happy accidents can come through, and sometimes that's where some of the surrender happens for me. And I find sometimes what ends up on the canvas is like nothing like what I had in my head, but might even be sometimes better.
I mean, and I hear what you're saying, and I think it's more like there's a limitation in that, in this one direction when I'm making work, that it bothers me. It's not a place that feels like happy accidents. It's more like an obstacle. Like in music, I studied singing opera for a while,
Oh, cool.
and I know a lot of singers who are really good at doing whatever, sing music. They're in bands, or they're folk singers or whatever. They probably couldn't sing opera. Like, their voice would not really work for it, and so if they tried to sing opera, the result, they might enjoy it, but if they were more aware of like what operas, what that tradition is, they would probably say, oh, this is not for me, and even for myself, even though I could make the sound, I didn't really like opera enough to want to devote the amount of attention you need to put into understanding the tradition and the music and all of that to want to do it. I just didn't care enough about that genre. So I just took the experience of learning about it and went back to doing things I like doing.
At what point did you study opera?
I had been playing music for years, and I decided I might want to teach music at some point. It was like a career choice. I thought maybe I'd like to teach music at some point. And I thought, okay, so what could I do? I'm an electric bass player who plays in rock bands, and I play a little jazz, and what could I do? And I thought, I could be a vocalist and teach voice. That's the most classical instrument that I have access to. So I decided to try that. So I gave that a shot, and it was, sort of okay. And just sort of I really enjoyed a lot of it, but it ended up not really being the thing that I wanted to do. And I was living in DC at the time, and I've lived in DC twice. I grew up there, and then I moved back there. And both times I found it's a lovely city, but I don't want to live there. So I decided, where would I like to go? And I decided I'd like to be in New York.
Had you ever lived in New York before?
I had not. I had visited a bunch of times. But I had spent 10 years in LA, mm-hmm. and I loved LA. I loved the artistic component of it. That's what DC doesn't have. DC has an art scene, and more every place has an art scene.
Yeah.
But the relationship of the arts to the city in DC is really tiny, mm-hmm. because the city's about government.
Mm-hmm.
And when I lived in LA, I felt so at home, like people are into the arts and they care about the arts and there are a lot of artists. And, you know, unlike what we were saying about where we grew up, you know, it's
yeah.
like everybody understands when you're in the arts there, you know. And I saw New York as a place that would be like LA in terms of an interest in the arts, but more of an interesting quirkiness and more diversity than I had found, than I remembered about LA. And LA could be completely different now because that was also a long time ago. But it's pretty much been the case since I came here. I found what I expected to find.
Yeah, that's what I looked to New York for as well, I think, when I decided to move here. I grew up not too far outside of New York,
yeah.
but I grew up going to the city.
You're a train ride away. You're closer than I
real
am
close
now.
Yeah.
But it's a different world.
It's a very different world, and I found myself taking the train, that Long Island Railroad train, into New York every chance I could as a teenager to get that dose of diversity and feeling of art in the air.
And so being here, how has it felt? Like, has it been soul-satisfying?
That's a really interesting question that I haven't thought about. In one way, I can't picture myself anywhere else, but I don't know if that's just because I've been here. I think where this home is right now is specifically a really lovely place because I'm just a short subway ride away from more bustling, diverse parts of town. But right here I have the peace of the park and the trees, which is, I think when I do feel a little bit restless here, it can be because of all of that hustle and bustle. And sometimes I do miss the quiet of less activity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start thinking about a fantasy of a country house.
Right.
But I think overall, it has been really satisfying, and it's allowed me a home base to return to while adventuring out to other parts of the world and into different arts communities, different types of making, different yoga communities. When I first moved here, I had never practiced yoga at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school 3 blocks from Ishta for
right.
3 years and had no idea it was there.
Right.
And I love that it's the kind of place that seems to have an endless potential of discovery. I think I always want to live somewhere like that.
Yeah. It's true. When you're in artistic communities, you know, the classic gentrifying community situation that so many cities have either gone through or they're in the midst of going through, there are these beautiful emergences of activity. You know, people's creativity comes out in food,
mm-hmm.
in art making places, in gathering places.
You can see it in parks, I want to even say in stores, but just in community centers that attract groups of people.
Right. Right. And in stores where sometimes the things that are carried in the stores reflect something about what's being made in the community. The thing in New York City, you know, over the past 30 years or whatever, it's so much of all of that, that it's become a sort of business in itself. You know, there's still like people starting up things, like Etsy, you know, like creating a thing where in which you can create, that it's almost more appealing to think about a place like Detroit, where everything's growing from the ground up again.
Yeah.
So it's possible to be on a more human scale. I think the human scale component is really tricky, because when you move to the country, it's human scale, but there's no one else there.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to the city, you know, the city has its own weightiness to it.
That it can be challenging to get that space of the country.
Right. But then you have the other individuals who are also trying to do things that are human scale, and then you meet with them, and then you have community with them.
Yeah.
And that's really helpful. That bolsters, you know, your own excitement and enthusiasm, and sometimes even ability to create things. I mean, certainly in the theater world, you need that collection of people to make something happen.
Yeah. And I think when there is that saturation of activity, like in a place in New York, it can be sometimes more challenging to find the space for that kind of connection or community building.
Right, the size makes it problematic also.
Exactly. You and I were talking recently about how it can be a challenge to find space in New York for that kind of arts community building. And then when you bring up Detroit, I think of, wow, I wonder, was that what New York was like just a few decades ago?
Yeah. I mean, I moved to New York in 1999, and shortly after that I started to meet artists. I lived in a studio in the South Williamsburg that was a studio. It was an illegal place to live.
Yeah.
I knew somebody who had occupied a building further down in Williamsburg that had no power. Like, they ran wires from one place where there was power into this building, and they were in the process of trying to gain ownership of it, because the city at the time had a squatter law for artists, which came from like the Soho days, that if you could take over this place and bring it up to like usefulness, you could have it.
Yeah. I think someone I went to grad school with was still doing that in Bushwick, probably about 5 years ago. A group of artists had just taken over this building and decided it was theirs.
Yeah. And, you know, now I don't know that there's any place in New York that's like that. I mean, people are moving into the Bronx and the outer fringes of Brooklyn, but it's more almost like desirable real estate moves.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, artists working here are having to come up with new models of survival.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before it was like, you know, how can I get heat in this studio? Now it's like, how can I even afford to have a studio?
How can I get other people in a space with me?
Right. Share the space, or work out, figure out how to afford an apartment where there's an extra little closet where I can make work.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, my solution was I moved farther out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm giving up some of that community feel.
Have you noticed a shift in your experience of that community feel?
Yes, tremendously. Like, I've stopped working in a certain way on some things that I was daily doing, you know, and I haven't exactly figured out how to get that started again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something I have to meditate on. Like, how am I going to recraft work? You know?
Yeah.
Because right now the excitement or the energy that I was feeding on to make work is no longer present. So I either have to move myself back into that space to work, or I have to figure out, how do I get that energy where I am?
How to transport it on the Long Island Railroad.
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, I have this interesting relationship with making art these days where I'm so much involved in my yoga teaching practice and this
Yes.
transmission of this resource to people that I love to make art, but it wouldn't be the end of the world if I didn't make art. Although maybe it would at a certain point, maybe I would start to feel a lack, you know. But in the same way, I paused from making music for a long time when I was making visual art. It felt like those were the right songs. Photographic, a photograph was a better song than what I could write, or this exhibition that I'm trying to pull together is a more interesting thing than something else I might have done. So right now I'm content in the yoga making that I'm doing, and making this podcast is a new creation. So that's interesting, you know, as a creative project.
Absolutely. I often feel like when I go to teach a class that making the words for the class isn't its is a an art making process on its own.
So I don't know. I have a couple of projects that are like in midstream, so I definitely would like to
Oh
finish those. So
yeah.
I have to figure out some way to work to at least get those done. I feel some desire or drive to wrap those up and then see, you know, do I still want to make art in that way too? And probably the answer is yes. And I have to come to some kind of terms with this relatively new thing that I've done, which is move out of bustling Brooklyn and try a new living situation.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to hear about the real life challenges of what happens when you move away from that activity. Because in my fantasy of moving out, I probably wouldn't move to Long Island because that's where I grew up, but my fantasy of a country house, all the space lends itself to creativity. But in the truth is that it's like the art making process, like the yoga process, happens within, it's internal. And it happens in the here and now. And so sometimes too much space can be, I don't know, stifling in its own way.
One of the teachers in the Ishta lineage, Bharati, is said to have gone off to the Himalayas and hung out in a cave and had all these realizations. So in that spaciousness, you know, like found happiness essentially. But at a certain point he said, wait, I can't just keep this stuff here. I have to go back and share this with people. You know, which is perfect explanation, I think, of what we do. We're content to make or go sit at the table or go hang out in the studio or sit in front of the canvas or work with the texture of a stone and find the joy of that. But then sharing it is a piece of the artwork as well.
It's the perfect metaphor for the practice of yoga. There's like the expansion, the touching into the universal, and that's great, but then there's also the engagement and the coming back to like the matter of what you can really engage with,
Life.
life.
Because ultimately we're all living life. Well, I think we're going to leave it there with such a nice, profound thought.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter. This was such a treat.
Thank you. I'm so glad to have got this chance to chat with you.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Namaste.
Namaste.
I want to thank all of you who've already supported me at patreon.com. I couldn't do the show without you. And I ask everyone else who's enjoying this show to please let your friends know and check me out on patreon.com. Subscribe for any level you like and know that you're helping this information get out to the world, including into your own two ears. Namaste.